I'm going to have one reading today. It's just going to be out of Genesis, and it's part of the first creation story. It's in Genesis 1, and I can give you all the verses because I'm skipping around a little bit. That would just be a boring string of numbers. So just know that this is parts of Genesis 1, the first creation story. In the beginning, when God created the heavens and the earth was formless, void, and darkness covered the face of the deep, while a wind from God swept over the face of the waters. And God said, "Let there be light." And there was light. And God saw that the light was good, and God separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, the first day. Then God said, "Let us make humankind in our image, according to our likeness. And let them have dominion over the fish of the seas, and over the bird of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the wild animals of the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth." So God created humankind in God's image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. God saw everything that he had made, and indeed, it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day. Okay.
So this next one is called "Le Tenin." It's a French piece by Saint-Saëns, and it means
so much of I could just listen to that the rest of the day, personally. Kind of feel bad to get up here and start talking at you, frankly. My message this morning is entitled "Querying Creation, No More Boundaries." So from time to time, I get questions about my book of prayers and why it refers to God as a querying God. So I thought that this might be, being that this is Pride Month, this might be a good time for me to revisit a three-part sermon series I did back from well beyond before COVID on queer theology. Now, let me acknowledge right up front that I do not look like the person who should be giving a talk, more or less three talks, on queer theology. I am a white, heterosexual, cisgender, Gen Xer male from the South. I am sure there are probably even more reasons why I do not seem like the person who should be giving this talk. But frankly, I'm truly trying not to think too much about those reasons since I'm about to give this talk. So, let me start by saying I make no claims on being an expert on queer theology. I am just a very enthusiastic student. I can honestly tell you no other type of theology has ever resonated with me more, both spiritually and intellectually, than queer theology. And as we will all see by the end of this sermon series, or at least I hope we will all see by the end of this series, queer theology itself suggests that the barriers that some folks will point to as the reasons why I shouldn't be giving this talk might actually be the very reasons why it is good that someone like me is able to begin exploring this emerging theology with me. Now, when I say emerging theology, it's important to recognize that this is a theology that's already over 3.5 decades in its formation. It began in the 90s, and I apologize, this is going to get a little bit academic for a few minutes. It began in the 90s, and it was rooted in actually queer theory, which began with the consideration of gender and sexuality other than heterosexuality. Then, the philosophical theory quickly incorporated critical consideration of cultural norms and binary thinking, among other divisive phenomena. And from that space, or at least in conversation with that space, sprang queer theology, and technically it sprang first as gay theology and lesbian theology. But the two ultimately came together under the larger umbrella of queer theology. Like its philosophical sibling, queer theory, queer theology is very much interested in the practical or positively applied theories by and about the LGBTQIA+ community. Now, this is where I think, though, it starts getting interesting. In that particular pursuit of all of these coming together, themes began to emerge, particularly in regard to societal norms and societal expectations. After all, given that gender variances have always been a part of creation, a creation that our scripture reading today calls good, it's always been a part of it. Given that, the marginalization of the queer community and its members happened because of a majority culture trying to normalize everything to themselves and their behavior, and setting up rules and expectations that shamed anyone not fitting into their more Puritan desires. It was a shame that was so strong and so societally driven that it cut people off from being able to fully express who they are. And it drove some to suicide. And don't even get me started on those from that dominant part of society who brutalize and kill people who are part of the queer community. While my eldest son is trans, and I have people very close to me that are in my life that are bi or gay or lesbian, as a white, heterosexual, cisgender, Gen Xer male from the South, their experience is not my experience, and I wouldn't feel comfortable trying to articulate their specific spiritual needs from a theological perspective, at least not without doing it in conversation with the guidance of someone from that community. However, learning from the work that has already been done and is being done, and building on things that are so important to me, like liberation theology and social justice, now that That's not only something I'm willing to do, it's something I'm excited to do here with you today. And I also have to say, as I first started investigating all of this, I quickly began to realize that queer theology is closer to the root of many of our scriptural texts than anything I've studied thus far in my life. So let's start at the beginning. That is, the biblical beginning, the creation stories. As the story is told, in the beginning, what was all bound up in one space. And as binding tends to do, what was limited. It was bound. Defined by borders of its binding, it was a mess, a mixed up, bound up mess of darkness and nothingness, which paradoxically was also everything. In Hebrew, it's called the tohu wabohu. So God stepped in, and from the bound up nothingness, which was everything that was, I know it's confusing, and began creating everything that will be. So it's important to recognize here that as that story is told, as that creation story is told, creation comes from unbinding everything in order to give it meaning. I would go as far as to say the best, most remarkable creations always do just that. They unbind things. They break down barriers and boundaries. So in this creation story, we also learn that God creates humanity. More specifically, the first human. The Hebrew text here, it actually labels the original human as Adam, which is a single, non-gendered, or gender-neutral word. In the first creation story, yes, there are two creation stories, but in the first creation story, God creates humanity, Adamah, in God's own image, which should leave us with the question, what is that image? Well, it's not surprising, it turns out that there are a lot of dimensions of that image, but the one that seems to have most immediate importance in this creation story is this. This human, Adam, was created both male and female. So the first being, the first human being, is created both male and female, a reflection of God, the creator of humans. Or as my friend, the Reverend Dr. Jeff Hood, dean of the New Theology School, puts it, the dichotomy of gender at the first reading of this passage seems to leave out all who would not fit in the binary of male or female identity. But he goes on to say, this passage says that God created them both, male and female. And it turns out that in early rabbinic exegesis, it supports the same understanding of the text. American rabbi and theologian Margaret Mowers Winning takes this all one step further by saying, when the biblical text, this is really important, so try to follow this part along. When the biblical text says, as we read, there was evening and there was morning the first day, it means, of course, that there was evening, there was dawn, there was morning, there was noon, there was afternoon, there was dusk, there was first day. Evening and morning, those two words, are used simply to encompass all the times of the day, all the qualities of life that would be found over the course of an entire day. So too, she says, in the case of Genesis 1.27b, which is the creation of humanity, the whole diverse panoply of genders and gender identity is also encompassed by the words male and female. So read not there that it says God created every human being as either male or female. But rather, God created humankind, male and female, and every combination in between, much like day and night. If we are to begin to take the point of this first creation story seriously, as the Reverend Dr. Hood points out, we must live into the world that God created past gender binaries and into the queer. He also mentions that since in the story God continues to refer to humanity as them, it may be that that is a much healthier way of viewing our own selves in regard to gender. It turns out that the creation story of humanity is yet another example of the queer behavior of God. The God that broke into the nothingness to create everything in this story breaks into the binary gendering that we have tried to impose on the story. The story reveals a more boundless understanding of humanity being created in the boundless image of God, even as it relates to gender. For surely God is female, male, everything in between, and ultimately more than all of it put together. I am left to believe that seeing other humans as anything less than boundless expressions of gender that is unique to each person is nothing short of blasphemy. I'm also left to be reminded that the immensity of the diversity in creation, that diversity was named to be good over and over again by God. How dare we try to limit the beauty of God's boundless creation with our self-serving desire to normalize everything towards ourselves with our made-up, stagnant boundaries and judgmental categories. The lack of this theological insight, as well as the human capacity and perhaps drive to normalize everything to categories, frequently binary, either-or categories, has made space for exclusionary theology that leaves far too many people hiding who they truly are away in causes because they have falsely been convinced that they are not as much of a reflection of God as others are. The whole thing is even worse when you realize that in truth, as I have just talked about, those very people could easily be truer reflections of God than those who seek to place boundaries on what is acceptable to a boundless God. At its core, queer theology is about LGBTQIA plus folks thinking about God from their own unique point of view. And in particular, it is about breaking down the social constructed binary boundaries of maleness, femaleness, heterosexual, homosexual. And then more recently, queer theology critiques of socially constructed restrictive categories and boundaries have actually expanded into many of the areas that society has claimed are some form of a fixed binary, such as race and class. So hand in hand with theological approaches like liberation theology, post-colonial theology, feminist theology, queer theology is opening new doors for understanding a fuller application of the message of radical love that is so prolific throughout the Hebrew and Christian sacred texts. And ultimately, at the heart of queer theology is the concept of a radically inclusive love that necessarily breaks down boundaries and barriers and frees us all to live a broader and more inclusive life that are more fully lived and more fully experienced. I would argue it frees us towards the fullest purpose and meaning of life. It also happens to be the central message of the person whose teachings Christians attempt to follow. And it happens to be the topic of the next of my three-part series on queer theology. I promise the next two sections aren't quite so scholastic. I hope that you'll be joining me next week in consideration of it. And in the meantime, may I encourage you to consider the spaces and places in your lives where you may be buying into societally induced and enforced fixed binary categories which illegitimately marginalize others, and make a choice to throw off those perspectives in favor for a for living into a radical love that is so a radical love is so boundless that it necessarily dismantles those false boundaries. The Reverend Dr. Patrick Chang, author of Radical Love and Introduction to Queer Theology, tells us, God is the very manifestation of a love that is so extreme that it dissolves existing boundaries. So it seems to me living a life that dismantles existing boundaries is the very definition of being in relationship with God. So, I encourage you to do just that.
I guess we have another fresh piece. Some of y'all probably have heard this one, Salud Yomar by Elgar, and it means greetings.
You to join me, and you can take this as a meditation or a moment just to breathe in and breathe out, grab hold of the words that you connect with, or a prayer, but let's all do bow our heads. As we attempt to follow the teachings of Jesus, which encourage us to love all people, we recognize that our lives are not always as welcoming as they should be. We do wish to love everyone. We do try to love everyone. But it's just a whole lot easier to love some people compared to others. We admit that the people that tend to be easier to love also tend to be the people who look a whole lot like us. May we open our hearts and minds that we might see a reflection of love in all people. And in that, may we see that all people look a whole lot like us. Let us be forever more open to that kind of inclusivity. Let us learn to love with hearts wide open. Let us be inspired to live lives that include everyone equally. Let us continue to grow to be a people who exclude no one for no reason. Not for the color of their skin, their sex or sexuality, the amount of money in their bank account, the job they hold, the religion they follow, or the country in which they were born. And when we don't, may we recognize it, correct it, and continue to learn to love with hearts wide open. Amen. Seek this blessing. May you walk in harmony with each other in creation, knowing that we are one. And may you know love and joy throughout your life. And may your words and actions share that love and joy with all of those you meet.